The Executive Chair on News Talk.
And I'm delighted to welcome to the Executive Chair this week. He's the co-founder and CEO of Seatfare Technologies Limited, and his name is John O'Neill. How are you, John?
Hi, Bobby. Thanks very much for having me today.
We'll go straight into the business of yourself, John. You're an Northside dub.
Yes.
Grew up in Raheny, Sutton. You're from an entrepreneurial family. Your grandfather was involved in some creameries back in the day.
My great uncle, actually, and my grandmother was involved in it as well. Yeah, that's right. The Monument Creameries.
Go on.
Which was a big... He was a dairy farmer from Banshaw that came up to Dublin in the early 1900s. And he managed to set up this very big creamery business, which would have had multiple outlets around Dublin. So he came along at a time when dairy products wouldn't have been standardised. There wouldn't have been a lack of quality and the like. And he put a standard on it. And they were developed a very, very successful chain of shops that was there until probably the 1960s.
Now, you hustled a bit when you were at school. You were involved in school discos. You sold these A to Z list, which I think I remember, which was an advertising pamphlet. So there was some early entrepreneurial leanings there, let's call it.
Yeah. I've definitely had an entrepreneurial spirit. I think it's in my DNA, to be honest. I think I'll always be doing this until I die.
So it was off to Trinity where you studied maths and economics. You say your first real job was with a company called Expert Edge that I actually remember, believe it or not.
With Donald Daly.
Yeah.
Donald is quite well known in Irish tech circles.
Yeah, so what did you do there?
I was software development and we did automated testing. So we would have done, my job was really consulting, so I would go into client companies.
So then you co-founded Quality Automation. That was probably in the late 90s.
Yeah, that was around 97, 98.
And that was a website performance testing business.
Yeah.
So what did you actually do there?
So it was a consultancy company as well that focused on automated testing and performance testing of websites. But we developed a product, which was kind of, I suppose, an original SaaS type product where we would monitor other people's websites for them. So we'd monitor their uptime, where they're up 24/7, and also the performance of their web pages, how fast they were downloading. And this at the time in the early 2000s was quite vital for instance, the banks were many of our customers, but also the telcos were many of our customers. So the banks were trying to check that their banking systems were up, and the telcos then that their shops would work.
Now, you've been around for a few recessions. The first one, I think, that maybe wiped that business out was in 2009.
Yes.
Was that a very painful process?
We were very close to the edge with the dot-com bubble burst. We're very, very close to the edge. And we just got a lucky break. Unfortunately, we had to let people go back then. So that was back in 99, 2000, I think. But put it starkly, we were down to about 20 days cash. So we're right at the edge. So I guess that was where I first started developing resilience from there. So with 2009, you could kind of see it coming in because the clients didn't all leave us immediately. It was one after the other. They saw what we're doing as kind of a luxury service.
You know, in many businesses, the lights almost went out overnight.
Yes.
Didn't they? Yeah. In building firms, some tech companies.
Well, one thing I've learned in business is that when things go bad, they go bad very, very quickly.
Yeah. And as you say, you're the king of resilience, having learned the hard way, like many of us. So what did you do then? How did you pick yourself up again after essentially being wiped out in 2009?
Well, to a degree, I was kind of lucky. Back in 2004, I set up a website. It was just purely a website to sell tickets called tickets.ie at the time. And that we were able to provide a low-cost ticketing service. And I worked with a lot of the local promoters around town, around Dublin, and also a further field throughout the country. So I was quite fortunate I had that to fall back on. So I moved into tickets.ie at that time. Prior to that, I never took a salary. So any money that was made in that company was just reinvested. So we had built up a little bit of cash within the business. So I used that to build up a team and then build out the platform, build it out into a complex and scalable ticketing.
Was effectively a side hustle for you, became your mainstream job.
Yes.
And you developed that too. What, a revenue of 24 million just pre-COVID? COVID.
Exactly, yeah, just before COVID.
And then we go back to more resilience because COVID wiped you out again.
COVID was absolutely devastating for us. In particular, it hit us extremely badly because most of our most of our revenue is coming from sports-based ticketing. And of course, sports events were able to continue to happen, but they were happening behind closed doors and they were happening with minimal, I think there was at one stage, there was 200 capacity matches. And that was devastating for us because we weren't getting any revenue in.
Yeah.
Whereas if we were purely doing music tours, the tours were still being announced. People were selling tickets, and if and basically they were getting revenue in that we weren't able to.
So that was a tough time for you. You entered Scarp in 2022. Were you able to buy some of the assets out of the business then to go again?
Yes, yeah, we were lucky. The great thing about Scarp was, the most difficult thing, first of all, about Scarp was actually going into it, because I know there's businesses out there struggling. So if I could just say that to them, that's what I found the most difficult thing. But once you're in Scarp, the process is great. We worked with the guys in Baker Tilly, who are now Assets, and we're still in executive control. That's one thing you are when you're in Scarp.
Right.
The great thing was that we were able to attract a lot of interest. So we had a number of bidders, and as a result of that, you can kind of create value within the deal. So the value we were able to do was we were able to take the ticket study software out of the company entirely, because the company that came in to invest was a German entertainment company, and they had a ticketing arm themselves, so they didn't need it.
Is it a fair process, Scarp? Because ultimately, people still get burned, don't they?
Yeah, well, I think any of those processes, people are going to get burned, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The thing about Scarp is that there has to be a viable existing business. When you peel back the layers, it has to be a viable existing business under.
Okay, so did that ultimately then become Seatfare, which is the business you're in now?
So I basically, I continued on in Ticketstudy as part of the corporate group then, and I continued on for another 2 years until I moved on in February of 2025. It was time for me to go. But at that point, I was trying to think, okay, look, you know, what am I going to do? I'm at a loose end here. What am I going to do? But I had been working on Seatfare prior to COVID, and it just, the more I was looking at the market, I was like, look, this is the right time. This is the right time for doing something like Seatfare.
Now, I want to ask you about Seatfare, because, so you're saying that ticket pricing today is largely guessed in advance. I wanted to ask you about that, because that wouldn't have been my appreciation of it. And you say that this business helps, I suppose it's bands, promoters, to align the ticket price, the optimum ticket price, with the demand available. Now, is that dynamic pricing?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's not dynamic pricing in how we think about dynamic pricing, which is surge-type pricing. It is dynamic pricing from the point of view is the price is happening in real time. It's determined by demand itself, so it's dynamic from that point of view. However, having said that, it's the fans themselves that are making that pricing decision. So it's the fans themselves, given their own demand, that's setting those prices.
Yeah, but that's kind of a bit of a cop-out, is it not? Nobody wants to pay to watch one person pay $150 for a gig, and then when I come along, I have to pay $400.
Yeah, well,
and that's what happens, no?
Yeah, no, not in this particular case, no. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get a mixture of the supply, which is constrained venue. So venues have their own cap. We're trying to match the people, how a fan experiences the event itself. Some fans will want to pay more to get down the front. And, you know, if it's your favourite band, you're happy to pay more to get down the front. But if your favourite band comes back 6 months later, you'll pay less and move to the back. But crucially, what we're trying to do, it's not about maximising prices. We're trying to optimise the price. So maybe that event needs to move into a bigger room, or maybe it needs to move into a smaller room. But as things stand at the moment, as a result of the guests' work with pricing itself, it's led to a massive secondary market when tickets are underpriced in the first instance. And that's huge. It's a 40 billion euro market.
So underpricing a ticket means that they sell out too quickly.
They sell out too quickly.
And I could have got more for them if I was the band or the promoter.
You could have got more, or maybe you needed to move to a bigger venue.
Right.
So the price could actually drop, because you're getting more people in to see the artist.
Right.
And that's the other side of the coin, is the 25 billion euros worth of seats that go on sold every year. So what's happened is frustration with fans. We've got queues. We've got lack of price transparency. We've got like bots, we've got touts. So what we're and the artist is losing the value that's from underpriced tickets and also overpriced tickets. So we're just trying to bring fairness and transparency to that.
Is, and again, I don't mean to be giving you a hard time, but is there any such thing as price transparency? I find it a hard concept to actually buy into. Do you ever really know, as a fan who's buying a ticket, do you ever really know if you've paid too much or too little? Do you really know who's getting what out of your €300 or whatever it is?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think we're getting into kind of more philosophical terms there about fair markets and getting the true market value for things.
Well, but to support you, I'd suggest that, you know, anybody who's in business, as these bands and promoters are, they're in the business of trying to maximize whatever it is they're selling. So they, you know, regardless of what anybody says, Oasis are going to take the highest price that they can get for the available seats.
Yes,
they are. And to think that they're not is futile.
Yeah, of course they are.
So I think if you go in with that approach, maybe you're a little bit more sympathetic.
But it also has to be balanced with the amount of demand that's there. So
sure.
If they can go into a bigger venue and more people can see them, you might actually find the price drops down a little bit, but the revenue is maximized. And that's what we're trying to do, optimize the ticket price to maximize the attendance and maximize the revenue.
All right. So this is an EI-backed venture.
Yes.
I think you're hoping for a high-potential startup. You've raised €1 million. Now you're heading out into the market to test this great piece of software.
Nearly. We're almost there with €1 million. So yeah, we've come through Enterprise Ireland's pre-seed startup fund. And from there, we're moving into the high potential startup unit. And that, of course, has to be co-invested. So we've got solid momentum at the moment with our investment round. So hopefully we'll close it out in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, so This is going to be a fairly tense time now, the next 6 months, because you're going to have to validate everything that you just told me there out in the marketplace.
Yeah.
And is it a difficult sell, John? Is it a difficult sell? You say that it's a very traditional industry. Are people wary of new technologies around this?
Look, it is a conservative industry. And I think a lot of newcomers, if they were to come into the industry, they'll just run into walls. But we're in the industry a long time, so we know how to get around these obstacles. And also, my co-founder in the business, he's a guy called Dave Newton. Dave's been in the music business for a long time, not only in ticketing, but he also manages bands. So he's currently managing, for instance, the Boo Radleys. Dave has got deep connections within the music industry, and we go out and we speak to these people. That's why in the Business Post article, I'd mentioned that we'd spoken to Radiohead's management. Dave can get in through the door with all these people.
Good man.
Sit down and chat to them.
Okay, finally, this is radio, so people can't see you, but you're adorning a mohawk hairstyle, which all was done for a good cause, I understand. Did Brent Pope actually cut your hair?
He started the cut. Yeah, Brent is a very talented man. He started the cut, and we had a proper hairdresser on hand to finish the cut off. But every year I organise a special networking lunch for entrepreneurs, company founders, CEOs and investors, and we come together at Christmas time. But I've started to put a charity angle onto it. So the cut actually happened at this lunch in Pearl Brasserie just at the start of December to a room like Brent basically tapped in the glass after the main course and basically announced that John was going to get his hair cut now, and the room just erupted.
And you raised, in fairness and fair play to you, you raised 11 grand for a great cause.
Yes, yeah.
Good man.
Elephant in the room and the Samaritans.
All right, well, look, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, John. You're in a very interesting business at a very interesting time for both you personally and professionally, and we wish you well on your quest.
Thank you very much, Bobby.
Thanks for joining us there. That's John O'Neill, the co-founder and CEO of Seatfair Technologies.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Sponsored by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 8. News Talk. Conversation that counts.